This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes.
We stand with the people of Orlando who have endured a terrible attack on their city.
Islamic terrorists need to know that they will not win, that America will stand strong and together, and despite whatever differences we might have and we debate in open society on whatever issue, we are all Americans, and we stand here together, united.
We are making it clear, anyone who attacks our LGBT community, anyone who attacks anyone in our state, will be gone after to the fullest extent of the law.
You just can't imagine this would happen to our community, our state, or anywhere in our country. But for somebody to go in there and be an active shooter and take those men, that number of lives, any life, but that number of lives and injure that many people is clearly an act of terror.
But I don't know where my son is. No one can tell me where my son is. If he's been shot, if he's dead, no one knows.
Those are just some of the voices reacting to the horrific scene in Orlando at the deadliest mass shooting in U.S. history. Welcome to The Rotunda. I'm going to get into this episode a little differently. No frills considering the deadly shooting where up to 50 people lay dead in a popular gay nightclub in Orlando. You'll hear from some of the high-profile voices, Florida's leaders, speaking out against the violence. Plus, I'll talk with Jill Roberts, news director of WQCS in Fort Pierce, where the shooting suspect Omar Mateen lived. Later in the program, a special in-depth interview with Bob Poe, an openly gay candidate for Central Florida's 10th Congressional District, which includes Orlando. Poe recently went public and revealed that he is HIV positive.
So now it's time to come out and share this with you publicly so that we can begin to have this discussion and remove the fear and the stigma and the shame that goes with this.
But first, let's turn our attention to Orlando.
And he's not answering the phone, but he was sitting right next to his boyfriend, and his boyfriend definitely was shot with multiple gunshots and taken in the ambulance.
Pulse Nightclub, my heart breaks for this mother and others waiting to learn if they've lost loved ones.
Today marks the most deadly shooting in American history.
Here's President Barack Obama making what is considered now a routine throughout his presidency, a speech about gun violence that is continually ignored by gun rights activists.
The shooter was apparently armed with a handgun and a powerful assault rifle. This massacre is therefore a further reminder of how easy it is for someone to get their hands on a weapon that lets them shoot people in a school, or in a house of worship, or a movie theater, or in a nightclub. And we have to decide if that's the kind of country we want to be. And to actively do nothing is a decision as well.
Here's Governor Rick Scott.
I mean, you just can't imagine this would happen to our community, our state, or anywhere in our country. But for somebody to go in there and be an active shooter and take those that number of lives, any life, but that number of lives and injure that many people is clearly an act of terror.
Senator Marco Rubio.
Every terror attack is a hate crime. This one, of course, is the added element of having targeted an LGBT establishment. I don't personally believe that that was a coincidence, and we'll learn more about it in the days to come. What I'm pretty confident in saying is that this is an individual that was at a minimum inspired by a radical Islamic group to take action today, and it is the hardest terrorist threat we face now is the homegrown violent extremist. The individual born in the U.S., raised here their whole life, maybe not even traveled abroad, who was radicalized to a point where they're willing to take the lives of 50 people and injure 53 more who are now fighting for their lives.
And Attorney General Pam Bondi, who, by the way, has fought against allowing same-sex marriage here in Florida.
Today is a tragic day, and we are making it clear, anyone who attacks our LGBT community, anyone who attacks anyone in our state, will be gone after to the fullest extent of the law.
I made the distinction on Bondi, and it includes Senator Marco Rubio and Governor Rick Scott, and most in the GOP. After hearing and seeing comments from many in the LGBT community who are saying the rhetoric, the denigration, the restriction of rights, blocking of inequality, have all fueled these negative thoughts and actions towards the LGBT community. But emotions are high, and of course the attention should be turned to those affected by this tragedy. The immediate families, friends, and everyone in mourning.
So this is a sobering reminder that attacks on any American, regardless of race, ethnicity, religion, or sexual orientation, is an attack on all of us and on the fundamental values of equality and dignity that define us as a country. And no act of hate or terror will ever change who we are or the values that make us Americans.
Woken up by my parents calling me saying, "Satora, wake up, Satora, wake up." And I thought something horrible happened. I'm like, oh my God, what happened? I called them.
The ex-wife of shooting suspect Omar Mateen is speaking out. Listen as Satora Yousefi explains how she noticed changes early on into her marriage.
I was devastated, shocked, started shaking and crying because more than anything, I was so deeply hurt and heartbroken for the people that lost their loved ones. In the beginning, he was a normal being that cared about family, loved to joke, loved to have fun. But then a few months after we were married, I saw his instability and I saw that he was bipolar and he would get mad out of nowhere. That's when I started worrying about my safety, and then after a few months he started abusing me physically very often and not allowing me to speak to my family, keeping me hostage from them. And I tried to see the good in him even then, but my family was very tuned into what I was going through and decided to visit me and rescue me out of that situation.
That's the ex-wife of shooter Omar Mateen. All right, this has been a bad weekend for Orlando. At 3:48 a.m., I received a call from I-24 News Service. I was scrambling to figure out why I was getting a call from Israel, waking me up out of my sleep. Long story short, they wanted me to do a live Skype interview in 20 minutes to discuss the mass shooting. That didn't even sink in when I heard it. I thought they wanted me to discuss the Orlando shooting death of former Voice contestant Christina Grimmie. I was wrong. From that moment, I've been tied to my computer, poring over the facts, updating social media, doing live interviews, and was in complete amazement that the international media, from the BBC, The Guardian, to I-24 News, were all steps ahead in their coverage. Granted the time difference, they were awake. Anyway, I've been going all day. But along with so many others who found themselves thrusted into covering this nightmare, I caught up with Jill Roberts, news director of WQCS-FM in Fort Pierce. By the way, my broadcasting career started at WQCS. All thanks to Jill. So how are things for you? How did you find out the news?
Well, you know, I was out walking the dog this morning, and then all the updates came up, and then I figured, well, I'd better come in. Once we found out that the shooter had a Fort Pierce tie. So I came in, and actually his residence was not really far from the station here at all. When I talked to NPR, I actually came back to the station and talked to them from here. But so I went there, and, you know, you spend a whole day with people telling you all we know is that we can't tell you. So they evacuated his apartment complex, and we talked to the people around there, and they were really, it seemed, surprised that, you know, right, this had been planned right in their midst, and also the realization that had he decided, you know, he could have done something like that here. So we talked to the local authorities, who confirmed that it was his apartment here in Fort Pierce. That they did bring the bomb squad. They had to wait for a warrant to be delivered, but they were going to go in, and they expected there could be some explosives or something inside. So I don't believe they found any of that. At the same time, his family had a home in Port St. Lucie. So they did take, I didn't see them take anything from the home in Fort Pierce, but they did take, I guess, a computer and electronics and stuff from the home in Port St. Lucie. It was quite a day.
Did his parents, friends, or anyone make comments or speak out about the incident?
I have just seen that the father said something. The father said that, you know, he doesn't know why he did it, and the father apologized. But I wasn't at that particular place. I guess somebody from NBC, I think, said that. So I wasn't at the home in Port St. Lucie, and I don't know if they came out and talked to anybody or not.
To be honest, this news has not sunk in just yet. I'm still going and going. I think I'm purposely keeping myself busy, because in the back of my head, 20 was crazy. 20 people dead was crazy. And then to hear 50, I was numb. I just don't want to believe this.
We go into that mode, you know, and you can't afford to sit down and feel it until, you know, that's what happened to me September 11th. I was so busy covering things that it wasn't until I went to Cece Lyle's funeral here in Fort Pierce. She had gone down on Flight 93. She was a flight attendant, a former Fort Pierce police officer. It wasn't until I went to that funeral that I gave myself permission to snap out of reporter mode and feel the same thing that everybody else was feeling. And then it was pretty devastating when that happened, because you kind of, you know, when you go into professional mode, you don't allow yourself to feel that way.
So it's all hands on deck, as I could imagine. Are you still at the station? It's 11 p.m.
I'm still at the station. The people from the kind folks in Miami sent a couple reporters up here to help out. So it's like the first time I haven't had only what I could get my hands on. So they went and went to a couple vigils and different things. So they're still up here finishing their report. So the one has left, but I still have one reporter up here helping.
Anything else you'd like to add about today's events?
You know, it is, as you say, very unreal. And it's one of those things that we want to really be sure we want to get it right. So that's why we spend so much time out there. We're bringing you the story with all the facts. And
that's Jill Roberts, news director at WQCS-FM. I've always been very impressed with her sign-off. She does it like, "This is Jill Roberts." Again, I started out on weekends doing the radio reading service at that station in Fort Pierce. My prayers and heartfelt condolences to everyone impacted by the senseless violence in Orlando. You're listening to The Rotunda, a podcast about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. Be sure to visit rotundapodcast.com for additional stories throughout the week ahead of each episode. Find us on social media, Facebook at Rotunda Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. The program is going strong thanks to the generous support of listeners like you and our sponsors. Check out rotundapodcast.com to see how you can join in and support this program. Welcome back to The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes. Former Florida Democratic Party Chairman Bob Poe made a big announcement recently. The candidate for Congress released a video revealing that he's HIV positive.
I'd like to share something deeply personal with you today. Something that in the past I've only shared with a few family members. And that is 18 years ago I was diagnosed with HIV.
Poe is also an openly gay man, and he's given several interviews about his sexuality and his journey to self-discovery. But once again, he's coming out to share another major life event.
Yeah, yesterday I let everybody know that for the last 18 years I've been HIV positive, but I'm very healthy, and I wanted that news to be known.
Why now?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, a friend of mine says, the best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago, and the next best time to plant a tree is today. You know, one of the things that happened while I was out campaigning was that I ran into a woman out in the community, and her name was, well, we'll call her Linda. And Linda told me that she had been recently diagnosed with HIV, and she was really scared. She was afraid it was a death sentence, and she, you know, didn't know where to go or what to do. So I shared with her some places that she might go to get the resources that she would need in order to get the appropriate treatment. But, you know, at the end of it all, I really wanted to just hug her and let her know that she wasn't alone and that I, too, was HIV positive. But I just wasn't in that place yet. I was still bound up in my own fear with the stigma that surrounds this condition.
For us to better understand how this fear and stigma works, what were you bound up in exactly? Like, what was holding you back?
Well, you know, just the fear of what other people would think, the stigma surrounding HIV that is out there. That's something that people, that keeps people from even getting tested. They're afraid to find out. They're afraid what that means. They're afraid that They're still afraid that it's a death sentence. They're afraid what it may say about them to other people. You know, so it's a common thing, and the stigma that surrounds a lot of things. You know, there's a stigma that surrounds poverty. There's a stigma that surrounds being LGBT. There's a stigma that surrounds so many things in our lives that, you know, it's really between our ears that we tell ourselves. These are things that we tell ourselves and that society tells us that are totally unnecessary.
Take us back to the moment, I guess it was 18 years ago, when you found out your diagnosis. What was going on around that time, and how did you find out?
Well, the first thing was that I had what was like the flu, but it also was not like the flu. It was something that just felt different. You know, our body tells us lots of things, and if we listen to our bodies, you know, we know that something isn't right. And so I decided to go get tested. And that test revealed that I was HIV positive. And, you know, all I remember was not really being able to breathe, and to have to force myself to breathe and to just, you know, keep myself together, because it felt like my world was, you know, coming apart. I didn't know what the future was. You know, and you know, like most people, I think sometimes when they get a diagnosis of anything that has any level of severity to it, you know, they go to the worst place. And that's where I went in my mind. And my doctor, you know, wanted to, you know, assure me that this was a very, even back then, it was a very treatable condition. And that, you know, with the proper medication, that I would probably live a very long and healthy life.
Were you involved in a relationship at that time? Did you have a support group? Who did you turn to?
Well, I was married at the time, and the very first person that I told was my ex-wife. Not my ex-wife. The first person I told was her, because she needed to know. And she was very, very supportive. It was a difficult time for us, as you might imagine. No, I really didn't have a support group. I did. I was able to go. I was encouraged to go to a newly diagnosed meeting of people who had been newly diagnosed at the Hope and Health Center here in Orlando. And I went there and got more information about living with HIV. That was very, very helpful. You know, but that's really about it in terms of a support group. And then really sort of, you know, just sort of closed off about it. You know, I took my medications, but didn't share it with anybody else. And in fact, you know, I remember, you know, in those early days, I would take my medication bottles and I would scrape the labels off of the medication bottles, not just my name, but also, you know, what the medications were. And I would scrape those off of the medication bottles. I would put them in a separate bag, and I would take them to a dumpster at a place far away from my home, so there could be no connection between me and the medication. You know, there was a lot of fear of being, you know, outed about being HIV positive.
Do you know where you could have gotten it from, or who you could have gotten it from?
No, I mean, you know, I don't. No, I don't know who I could have gotten.
How was the relationship at that time with your wife? Was this a monogamous relationship? I was reading up your bio just before we got on this call, and I think you were admitting to it was a time of exploration for you, even while you were married, right, as when it comes to your sexuality.
Well, you know, let me just say that it was a time when I was uncertain of my sexuality. I was exploring, and I was trying to, you know, I was trying to find out who I was and what I was. So, you know, in terms of my part in the relationship, no, it was not. It was not monogamous, obviously. And that's something that I'm not proud of, but that's a part of my history and a part of my story.
You're listening to my interview with Bob Poe, candidate for Central Florida's 10th Congressional District. Looking back as part of your history, I see you started off and you got into politics very young. And you said even before you could be a young Democrat, you were attending Young Democrats meeting. Tell us about that time.
So it first started off when I was about, when I was about 12 years old. My father had a convenience store in Sarasota. I was supposed to be stocking the shelves of that convenience store one Saturday, and instead of doing that, I snuck off and went across the street to the shopping center that was across the street, and there was the Sarasota County Democratic Party headquarters, and I walked into the Democratic Party headquarters, and the folks in there asked me if I would help them by passing out some brochures in the parking lot to the customers in the shopping center, and so I agreed to do that. And that's how I got my start in politics. I ended up meeting the candidate for governor at the time. And, it was a very exciting thing. So that's how I got my start in politics. I'm just glad that the Republican Party headquarters wasn't across the street.
You also, on a more serious note, you also spoke at that around that time in Sarasota was when you were also molested. What happened?
That was another very difficult time in my life. But I was molested by an adult, and so I'm a childhood sexual abuse survivor as well.
You were quoted as saying it wasn't until years later in therapy that you realized the imprint that the experience and how it conflicted and confused your sexuality. Explain what you meant by that.
Well, I never talked about it. I mean, I told my parents about it, and it was really never talked about again. I remember that there was a report that was made to the police. I don't know what ever came of that, although I know that the person who was the perpetrator in this case, to my knowledge, was never arrested or convicted or anything like that. But it was never really discussed in my family since that time. And I sort of filed that away. I think one of the things that came out of that, too, was I remember him saying, "You can't tell anyone," and that's something that that has played a part in my journey all along, and not telling somebody about my feelings toward men, and not telling people, when I realized that that really I was gay, having that coming out experience, and also about about HIV. I was still hearing those words in my head, don't tell anyone, don't tell anyone. So it did have an imprint on my life. And I thought that it didn't until I really could deal with that in therapy. And once I was able to unburden myself of that, I've been able to achieve a lot of healing, through that process.
How has things been? How since your announcement? What have you been hearing from people?
Overwhelming support, and I've had any number of people who have also revealed to me, quite surprisingly, or maybe not so surprisingly, that they are HIV positive. I've had other people who have called me to tell me that they have friends and relatives who are HIV positive, and that they appreciate the fact that maybe we can begin the discussion to take the stigma away from HIV, because it's the stigma that causes people to stay in the shadows and not get tested and then not get treatment. And it's the people who are untested and untreated, who have this condition, who have been exposed to HIV, they perpetuate HIV. And there's so much effective treatment out there that is readily available. People can live their full life and hopes and dreams just like I have. Because this is a manageable condition. This is more manageable than diabetes. And, but you have to, have the proper treatment. And so, that's my encouragement to people is let's bring this out into the light. Let's remove the stigma. It is just like any other chronic medical condition. There's nothing to be ashamed of. There's nothing to be afraid of. And if we can move this discussion forward and be rational and educated about it, then we can eliminate this disease.
Are you worried, or have you thought of the stigma, in the late 70s, early 80s, when this was being discussed as a gay man's disease? And since you're an openly gay man, and now with this announcement, of being HIV positive, some folks going back to that thought process of, well, he's a gay man with HIV, as if it goes hand in hand.
No, and you know, that the one thing that, I mean, when you think about the heterosexual women who have HIV and heterosexual men who have HIV, you know, this stigmatization that we have, and we sort of, one of the things that happens, and one of the things that we have to remove is this otherness, any kind of otherness. Oh, it's just gay men, or it's drug abusers, or this or that. It's this otherness that we continue to surround about this condition and other conditions that make people, you know, stay in the shadows. And that's unfortunate. Just like many other conditions outside of the health field, we have to destigmatize all of these things. These are facts of life that can be dealt with, and if they're dealt with in a rational, a loving, way, then we can erase all stigmas. There shouldn't be any shaming about anything, you know. It's just a fact of life, and let's move on.
If you win and succeed in your race in Congressional District 10, you would be the first openly HIV positive member in Congress. What do you plan to do with that distinction?
One of the things that I plan to do is to really push for the agenda to eliminate HIV as an epidemic by 2025 in the United States. Worldwide, by 2030, are some of the goals to make sure that HIV medications are available and affordable to all people. And probably one of the more important things is also to decriminalize HIV. Florida is one of the worst states when it comes to criminalization of HIV. And criminalization of HIV is one of the things that keeps people from getting tested, you know, and we just have to stop that.
All right. I understand you have a forum that you're working on in the coming weeks.
We will be having a workshop with one of the health and wellness programs here in Orlando with community leaders and people from the medical community, so we can begin to discuss how we can get more people tested and treated, and make sure that we have the funding for that, because funding has been an issue in some areas, and we need to make sure that the funding is there for the treatment, and that people are in the various communities are encouraging folks to get tested, know your status, and then if you happen to have been exposed to HIV and are living with HIV, get the treatment. That's the main thing.
How do you feel with your announcement? Is it similar to when you decided to come out to the public that you were gay? Do you equate it the same way? How have you been feeling within the last few hours since your big announcement?
You know, it's been a weight that's been lifted off my shoulders. I mean, for the last 18 years, I've gone around, you know, sort of always looking over my shoulder and wondering, you know, if that was going to come out, and if it was going to come out in a way that... you know, that would be not helpful to other people. I view this now as I've gotten into this really as a public service, a part of my public service. And I feel like I've begun to understand that because I'm in this position, I have both an obligation and a responsibility to share authentically, you know, who I am and about, with the transparency of everything that I am, in hopes that others will do so, that there's not, from a political standpoint, from many other standpoints, there have been some real trailblazers, you know, in the HIV/AIDS area, and people who have been leading in terms of enlightenment. But in the political arena, there have not been very many at all. And so I'm a little bit of a pioneer in this respect. And, you know, I hope others will follow.
All right. Do you think this will hurt you or in any way?
You know, I don't know. I mean, this is an unknown. There's no way to know if this will have, you know, what kind of an impact this will have on my political campaign. And frankly, I had to come to the decision that it really didn't matter. You know, that this was important enough that if it did damage my political campaign, I was content with that. that this was too important an issue to keep in the shadows. And it was time for me to be open and authentic about this and use my position as you know, and voice to be able to, you know, just to take away any kind of shame and stigma surrounding HIV.
Lastly, how is your partner, Mr. Ken Brown? How is your relationship with this news coming out so public? How are things at home?
Ken's wonderful. He's a great guy.
Bob Poe. All right, Mr. Bob Poe, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Special thanks to Bob Poe, candidate for Florida's 10th Congressional District. That's it for this edition of The Rotunda. Another special thanks to Jill Roberts of WQCS, the NPR station of the Treasure Coast. And my deepest condolences to everyone impacted in the shootings at Pulse Nightclub in Orlando. Remember to visit rotundapodcast.com and join us again next week right here for more stories about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes.